Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Today, it's my pleasure to be speaking with Dirk Fouts, who is one of the organizers of GeoMob in the Netherlands. So, GeoMob in the Netherlands started about a year ago. I had the pleasure to go and speak at an event in Eindhoven, at the very first event. Since then, they've had several events, and we have one coming up in the future. So Dirk and I were going to talk about how that experience has gone, a little bit about the Dutch geospatial scene in general, and then about some of the topics that are going to be featured at the upcoming event. So, Dirk, wonderful to have you on the show. I think many of our listeners that don't know you personally will know you from the pictures of you, including your dramatic map shirt that you wore at the very first event, which I very impressive, I have to say. We'll see if we can get that in the episode notes so that everyone can once again appreciate your cartographic fashion sense. Welcome. Thank you for organizing GeoMob Netherlands, and let's start off by you introducing yourself and explaining exactly what it is you do in geospatial.
Thanks, Ed. I tried to keep wearing these shirts with world maps. That's true. So until now, I did it for every single GeoMob. So I'll try to keep that as a gimmick. So I'm Dirk, Dirk Fouts. I live and work in the Netherlands. I have been doing geospatial stuff for the last 32 years, I guess. I'm mostly teaching, actually. I'm mostly teaching a bachelor level, all sorts of geospatial stuff, so like dashboarding and machine learning and things like that. That's what I do mostly at the moment. And apart from that, of course, I try to help you, or I try to help the community by organizing GeoMobs.
Fantastic. What pushed you to get GeoMob going?
Ha! It was actually the Belgians that pushed me. There was this first GeoMob in Belgium, and I was asked to speak there, or at least to attend, and I think I was also asked to speak. But I had no time. And I'd never heard of a GeoMob before, of course, because, yeah, it was the first. But then I realized, I sent a colleague of mine, but then I realized how cool it is. And I thought, oh, but the Netherlands could really use something like that as well. So that's why I thought, hey, why not organize the first Dutch one and then the second one and the third one? I intend to keep doing this. Unless someone else steps up and says, oh, I want to do it as well, then I'm happy to give that job to them. But until that time, I'm happy to do it. It's really nice.
I'm very thankful that you and your colleagues got it started. How has it gone so far? How have the first events been? I know we've had several events in Utrecht, where you're based. And then more recently, there was an event in Eindhoven. So to take us through kind of how it's gone.
It's gone pretty well, I would say. The attendance has been okay. I guess we could always use more attendance, but let's say around between 20 or 40 people, which I think is really nice, because it's if it gets any bigger, then at some point it's the crowd is too big and you can't really talk to anyone anymore. So it's quite nice to have that type of audience. The organization went well. I did it myself, of course, so I can't really say that it was horrible, of course. It's such a lovely format, as in basically listening to stories for 1 hour, five stories of 10 minutes-ish, ask two questions and onwards, just 1 hour, and then have a pizza and talk about it, and have a beer in your hand and talk to people about the stuff that you just heard. I think it's really a great way to spend an evening. It has been quite well. So we tried it mostly in Utrecht. I think you already mentioned that. Lately we did it in Eindhoven at Heer Technologies, which was really nice. They had this lovely room. It's gone like a charm.
Take us through a little bit about kind of the Dutch geospatial scene, or what kind of people have been speaking and what kind of things are going on. If you want, I can offer my own impressions from my, one thing I've always been impressed by the Dutch, you know, obviously it's a very densely packed country. And so everything seems to be very well managed on from a land type, land use kind of case. And of course, obviously GIS and plays a key role in that, of course, of knowing what is where. So that's my external impression, but you're obviously in the middle of it. So give us your, your impressions.
I guess you're absolutely right. So you always stole my story in a sense. But one other thing that's really well organized is the geospatial data availability. So there's a lot of open data available, more than on average. It's being regularly updated by the government. So there's an incredible amount of data just lying out there, and you can just download it or just use an API call to use it. And it's well maintained, well organized, and that's of course a key driver in GIS. I know that some German Bundesländer have pretty much the same thing, but others don't. But yeah, in the Netherlands, there's just a crazy amount of data available, and they call them base registrations, which helps a lot because it's really state funded and it's open and for free. And so that's a gigantic driver for all sorts of GIS analysis, and for that reason, all sorts of GIS applications. So yeah, it's we're really spoiled, I guess, in the Netherlands. And well, what you see is that go ahead.
Well, I remember your colleague Leonardo. He gave a talk about this. What is it? The 330-300 rule about that everyone should be able to see three trees, or you know, within 300 meters of park. And of course, this necessitates knowing the location of every single tree, which I found phenomenal. I mean, that really that's impressive that every single tree is kind of mapped and recorded. So.
Yeah, you're right. And every single building as well, of course. I mean, there's more countries that have that, but it's so well maintained and rich in attributes. And so, yeah, that's just we're really spoiled, I guess. And it enables us to calculate stuff like the stuff that you mentioned. How many trees can you see? Well, that's a visibility analysis, of course. We in the geospatial domain don't know what that means. But you need a lot of data to do that, and the data is available. So it's really spoiling us.
What are some of the more interesting kind of companies that are based around? I mean, not just government data, but like what who's doing interesting stuff that the rest of the world should be aware of?
Of course, the Netherlands is spoiled it that way as well. TomTom has a big headquarters in the Netherlands. HERE Technologies has a big headquarters in the Netherlands. But I need to say that most of it is government-based. It really is mostly government-based. And then, of course, there's all sorts of smaller players, right? I mean, there's a lot of people self-employed who can actually make a living in GIS because, the data's already there. So you can start from, not from zero, but you start to hit the ground running, in a sense. So there's a lot of self-employed people, but bigger companies are slightly more rare, I guess.
My impression is also that it's quite an active, or let's say disproportionately active, engagement with kind of open source technologies and this type of the OSGO kind of movement. You know, whatever the project is, you always come across kind of Dutch people contributing, and give us your take on that.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty much 50-50. Of course, ESRI is a big player in the Netherlands as well, just like everywhere else. And there's good reasons for that. Of course, it's great software. Having said that, there is a big open source community in the Netherlands, very active as well. Probably recently even more active because people would love to be slightly less dependent on big tech and things like that. But yeah, it's quite active, and I need to admit that I've been to quite a few of these Phosphor G meetings as well, all across Europe. It's a lovely group of people that participate in that. It's a lovely community.
Dirk, I don't know if you went to this event, but I guess recently, maybe this was like a year ago, there was some sort of I think it was Phosphor G I don't know if it was Netherlands or Belgium or Benelux or what, but it was, of course, held in Barlee-Hertog, in that famous town with... have you been there? Did you go to this event? What is it actually like there? Yeah. But have you been there before? Have you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's a nice place to go to. I mean, you can go to a bar and sit on one stool and be in Belgium and sit on the other stool and you're in the Netherlands and stuff like that. So it's really nice. It was done like that for historic reasons, I guess. Somebody owned some land and it turned out to be Belgian and the neighbor turned out to be Dutch. But the event was there. I did not go to the actual event, which is really stupid of me. But it's really nice to have an event like that. Of course, the people speaking Dutch, there's like 20 million of them. Mostly in the Netherlands and like 6 million in Belgium. And why not do it together? Hey, like the Germans have their Dag meetings for all the German-speaking people. Why not have a meeting on the Dutch-Belgian border and have all the Dutchy-speaking people all together in one room? It works very well.
Very nice. I would love at some point I'll find an excuse to go visit Barlee-Hertog and check it out myself. So...
Right. Well, I had to go to the Belgian part, actually. Yeah, Barlee-Nassau is the Dutch one. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Fine. All right. As you can see, I'm not the expert. So, we have a GeoMap Netherlands coming up. I guess you have some news to announce that I guess we're going to have to change the date due to a schedule conflict. So, take us through that, and then let's get into kind of what kind of the theme of that event is, and some of the topics that are going to be covered.
Yeah. So you're right about the first part, so we'll have to move it. We thought we'll have one more GeoMap before the Christmas holidays and everything, but it turns out that it's actually at that particular night there is a Christmas celebration. So I guess the venue is not available. We need to move it, and we'll move it to January after the holiday season. So it's going to happen on the 22nd of January. Contacts the speakers, they're all available on the 22nd of January, so I guess we'll move to that.
Perfect. Then we get something in the calendar for next year to kick things off. So also good. So,
and we have a lot of people willing to participate and speak, which is really nice because it's always a bit of a hustle to get everybody get a full program here. You really need. I don't know if you agree with me on that, Ed, but I kind of like it when there's five speakers, five times 10 minutes of 12 minutes. That's really nice. Five different topics, small topics. That's really the best. It's not always easy to find five people with five topics this time we're good.
My experience is it gets easier over time. You know, as you have more events and people attend the events, then they see I think in the beginning people think they need to have a super slick, polished presentation, and obviously that's not necessary at all. And it doesn't. It doesn't need to be that you announce that you're curing cancer or something. I mean, it can be just talk about whatever little project you did. And actually, in my opinion, some of the best talks have been ones where people talk about kind of things that didn't work. You know, things that, like kind of failures where they thought they were going to do something and it turned out they weren't able to do it or whatever. Because, that's where you can learn the most. So,
Really agree with you.
I encourage all listeners to get involved, but I agree with you. Five is kind of the sweet spot because if you have five, it's the perfect length. And if someone cancels, you still have four, which is also still good. But less, then it feels a little too short. So
I agree. So it looks like we're going to have five. So that's really good. And three out of those five are going to talk about livability indicators, which surprised me, actually. So you already mentioned the 330-300 rule that we featured. I think it was the first Dutch GeoMap.
Exactly. That was the one I attended, yeah.
True, yeah. So that would be, let's say, a livability indicator. It basically tells you how cool the neighborhood is where you live in. Or how healthy the neighborhood is where you live in. For some reason, this is really a topic. So I found three other speakers that are willing to talk about, the same realm, basically. So how can you quantify, how can you measure how livable your city is or your neighborhood? I guess that's a running theme. And I don't know about other countries, but I guess it's also important in the Netherlands. So we've got the data to support this type of analysis, and it's not so livable, There's a lot of fine particle matter, and there's a lot of heat stress, and yeah.
I assume this makes some, you have to make some sort of assumption, though, of what defines good livability. I mean, like, for example, in the 338-300, I mean, just for the benefit of our listeners, if I recall correctly, the idea was that from your house, you should be able to see at least three trees. I forget what the 30 is. 30 is, you should be...
You need to live in a neighborhood with 30% canopy cover.
Correct. Okay. Yes. 30% canopy cover. And you should be no more than 300 meters from a park or a green space of some sort, if I recall correctly. So all of those kind of obviously resonate and make sense. But on the other hand, they're also somewhat arbitrary. Why should it be 300 meters and not 200 meters or 400 meters, you know? Or so what are some of the other metrics, do you know? Like where do these come from? I mean, I guess it's you know, there's actually surveying done. I've been asking people, are you happy or not? Or what? Or how does it, how does this happen?
I guess all of the above, but you're right. I mean, one of the topics that will be covered in the next GeoMob is a guy that actually did a lot of research. So basically what he did is he gave these tiny little weather sensors to, I think, 100 people, and they were just supposed to just drive around or walk or whatever through a city. They would keep a diary of how they perceived heat and perceived the stress. But at the same time, he was measuring. So he has both the quantifiable heat and then the perceived heat. And he's trying to make a model to combine those two to see when do people really start to find it very annoying outside. Measurements and simply asking people is probably a great way to do it. But it's also all sorts of... like the World Health Organization has this rule that there should be, every person should have 75 square meters of green. And of course, that's really annoying when they say that, because it's 75 square meters of green. How far away from you? And why 75? And should it be like your garden, or should it be public space, or green? Is that like a meadow? What are we talking about? They didn't really quantify that very well. So I guess part of the work is to come up with things that make sense, answering all these questions and turning that into metrics that you can base your policy on, improve the quality of your landscape.
You know, recently at GeoMob London a couple weeks ago, we had a very interesting talk from a woman, an academic researcher, and it was about exactly this, that policymakers, on the one hand, we do have all this data and we have the tools now to build these models and to say this is a nice place and this is not. But what she found is that policymakers are often disregarding these models. In her case specifically, it was about the likelihood of flooding in certain areas. And what she found is that, you know, despite us knowing that there's a high risk of flooding in a certain region, nevertheless, it would still be built upon. And so we're kind of just, you know, creating the crises in a number of years' time, right, when the flood comes. And so is that, in the Netherlands, are policymakers actually using these tools? And is that what's driving also some of this work? Or is it more just kind of still in the theoretical stage?
I wouldn't say it's theoretical. It is being applied. It really is. Because what I notice is that many policymakers, they're just sitting there at their desk and they really want to do the right thing. But what is the right thing? When is it good enough? I think it really helps them to have some quantifiable rules that they can base their policy on. And they're really open to that. I mean, they just want to do the right thing. But yeah, who could tell them what the right thing is? So I think that's really the case. Having said that, I do recognize what you say, because, of course, they have more to keep in mind than just more trees or safe, unfloodable areas. I mean, there's more at stake, and they need to balance all these different things. And of course, what I see a lot, for instance, with livability is that everybody wants more trees, but effectively they're still cutting them down. Because it's not just about livability, it's also about mobility, for instance. So the street needs to be upgraded. And they have all these different things to consider, and within that balancing act, they make choices, and that's not always necessarily the one that I want. Yeah, that's So I guess it also applies to the flooding areas.
Well, you know, it strikes me, Dirk, obviously the Netherlands is famously, you know, below sea level in many areas and is made out of all this reclaimed land taken from the sea. And obviously that requires, you know, very precise management. And as particularly, unfortunately, as climate change and sea level rise comes, I'm wondering if there's a role here for the Dutch geospatial community kind of to be leaders in this space, because these types of problems that the Netherlands has been facing are going to become the norm, obviously, in many more areas. And so in that regard, I think it's really critical that the work that everyone is doing there and how we can then apply those models also elsewhere in other areas, which unfortunately, you know, whether we like it or not, seems to be what's coming at us. So
I fully agree with you. I guess not every part of the world is under sea level, but yeah, if we have sea level rises of, I don't know, up to 7 meters, I keep hearing, then yeah, there's a lot of areas that will flood, of course. Perhaps there is, all the Dutchies should put their geo work together and turn that into solutions. Who knows?
Well, this is of course the hope is, you know, also here in Germany for years, the hope has been, can the energy transition, you know, not just help us solve the energy problems, but also become a global industry that can help, you know, that can be applied elsewhere and lead to high value jobs and things. So, hopefully we can execute that. Anyway, it sounds like it's going to be a great event. Dirk, thank you to you and your colleagues for organizing things. Thank you to all of our speakers who are going to make it happen. I guess looking forward into 2026, what are your hopes for GeoMob Netherlands? What do you, you know, what would make, if you look back on 2026 at the end of the year, if we're speaking 1 year's time, what would make you say it's been a great year?
I think we should go for, I kind of hope to organize four geomobs. It would be nice if we could sort of move them around the Netherlands, not always in Utrecht, not always in Eindhoven, but different locations. What really works for you, Ed, you've pointed that out quite a few times to me, is that basically you have a venue where you do the event and then you go to another venue to have the drinks. And yeah. We haven't done that just yet in the Netherlands because I guess we're always stuck in venues far away from bars. But I think it would be really nice to try that as well in the Netherlands. So this,
well, you know, I do understand you have to adapt to your local logistics, of course. And you know, it's better to have an event than spend all your time contemplating what the perfect event would be. But my experience, yes, in we have found it does create a different mood when you go to a bar, and of course they're set up with all the logistics of serving people and things like that. And my experience is it creates more mixing and mingling. So, obviously for that, we need venue partners. So anyone out there listening who wants to host an event should, I guess, get in touch with you. And, it would be great, you know, if you could bring the show to a few other cities, other universities, and see what get more people involved. So, I wish you every success.
Thanks for that, and of course, you're always welcome to join us.
Well, I've been thinking for myself. Maybe I will make it back to the Netherlands in 2026 for an event. I enjoyed it a lot when I was there, so. We'll have to see what the travel schedule holds. So, and I have to say, Dirk, four events is ambitious. So I wish you luck. That's not, but you know, once you get the machine operating and you get more and more people, you know, aware of it and coming, then it does get easier. So, but you know, pace yourself. The key rule number one of GeoMob is it has to stay fun. It can't be work. So make sure it stays fun. Okay, let's wrap up there then, Dirk. What's the best way for someone to get in touch with you if they want to get involved? How can they reach you?
Well, I guess the GeoMob website is probably a great way to do that, right? I mean, I see that people sign up as a speaker through the GeoMob website regularly, and we're really happy with that. So I guess that's a great way to get in contact with both of us.
Okay, then perfect. We'll leave it at that. Any final thoughts you want to leave the listeners with, Dirk?
There is this one thing that I got that question like 2 weeks ago. So they have why organize GeoMobs in the Netherlands? Because we already have so many geo events. Okay. Why on top of that do a GeoMob? And actually, it set me wondering for now. Perhaps it's too much. Perhaps we shouldn't do it. I came to the conclusion, yes, GeoMob is fantastic. And actually, it's because another thing that someone said to me it clicked to this guy at some point for, GeoMob is really great because, I'm not sure, it's a bit offensive in a sense, but he said that as geo people, sometimes you're just stuck in a cave and every now and then you want to talk to someone else from another cave. And I think that GeoMob is exactly that. It's not necessarily the most outgoing people. It's not necessarily the sales pitches. It's really about I tried this and it like you said, it failed. It failed miserably, and I would like you guys to learn from that. That's GeoMob, and I think that's really great.
I have nothing to add. I think you're precisely correct. So I encourage all cave people out there to get to the events and make it happen. And obviously there are a lot of other very good events and encourage everyone to go to those events as well. So, but I think we're kind of trying to do a unique thing, which is why I'm very thankful to you and everyone else in the Netherlands for making it happen, Dirk. So thank you once again. And good luck in 2026. And maybe we'll have you back in a year or so to give us the update and see how it goes. But I hope before then I'm able to see you in person and add an event.
I would like that. Let's try for that.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.